Raised Rowdy.
All right, guys, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. I'm Nick Tressler.
My name is Kurt Ozon.
And we have our special guest, Mr. Larry Fleet. Thanks for being here, brother.
Hey, what's up?
Good morning.
Yeah, morning.
This is we got a couple podcasts today, and this is the first one, and Kurt and I are definitely, I should have had more of the caffeine. I think Kurt's on it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for being here early with us, brother.
Yeah, I've had a couple of cups already.
Yeah. Are you living in this area now, or are you still over?
I'm in Chattanooga.
Yeah, Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. You might not remember, I had you on the podcast, gosh, it's been 5 years ago
or so.
Oh, yeah. It was a virtual one, like, during COVID, so.
Oh, the good old days.
Yeah.
That was virtual.
Yeah, that was when everyone was nowhere, but you were more present than you ever were sometimes.
It's yeah.
Weird thing.
It was, everybody talks about it. I kind of enjoyed my time at the house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a year at the lake, you know, so. I mean, it was all right with me.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad. Sit on a boat all day and hang out. Yeah.
That's what I was talking to someone recently, and they said it was kind of like a reset. You know?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
Got your mind right, and, you know, always an interesting time. Of course, with like kids and stuff, too. You got to spend more time at home.
Yeah. Waylon's first year. So I got the whole first year of my boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was cool. A lot of people don't get to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And, then in 21, we had our little girl, and we were back on the road. So
yeah.
It was like, well, fend for yourself, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
It's she's done good, too. But, that was a good year for just hanging out with and watching your kid grow up. And
yeah.
You get real close with them, and we had some good times for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always a bright side to everything, and that was definitely one of that. I remember, like, watching you at that time kind of, like, go around on the golf cart and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
In the neighborhood.
Yeah. We put a lot of miles on that golf cart.
Yeah.
That's all we did. So when he was little, he just wanted to ride the golf cart and go on the boat and just kind of hang out. So that's all we did. I mean, there wasn't much, you know, we couldn't do a whole lot else. So we put a lot of miles on the old golf cart. We used to ride down the gas station. A dude named Jason that worked down there.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, my kid just loved him, you know. So every day we'd go to the gas station and get candy. So let's go to the gas station, get candy, Daddy. All right. We'd ride down there and get candy and just hang out at the gas station like we were in high school.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it reminds me of what's that Jay and Silent Bob where they like clerks where they just like smoke cigs outside
yeah.
of the gas station?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
I mean, it's small town living, honestly. I remember being a kid and like going around trying to find cans that we could turn in to like, you know,
oh, yeah.
like get more candy or like our mom give us a dime and we go and get a couple pieces of the bubble gum for like 3 cents a piece.
Do you remember like McDonald's had like 20 cent? Like plain hamburgers or something like that. You can get like enough food to eat for like a day for like a dollar back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
We used to do that.
It was cheap. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff, too. I remember hanging out, like just going up to McDonald's. We in my little town I grew up, which was outside of Nashville here, but we finally got a McDonald's when I was in probably middle school. And I remember being in high school and just like having $5 and then going up there and buying like 100 chicken nuggets for $5 and just piss off everybody that worked there because you had to cook 100 chicken nuggets.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing. The price of everything's up, but food's crazy. Like,
oh yeah,
I was cracking up with one of my buddies. Like, we always joke about like TGI Fridays and like, you know, like this small chains like that. I'm like, those are cheaper than fast food now.
Oh yeah,
it's
yeah.
crazy.
Went to Taco Bell the other day and it was like $20.
Yeah,
but I mean. We get a.
That's a shit ton of food at Taco Bell, probably still.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, it's a good amount. You know?
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I don't know. For me, Taco Bell really doesn't hit the spot until you have gorged yourself full of food. You know,
totally.
You can't just get a taco.
No.
You know what I mean, it's like, and even when you're full, you just keep eating until you're.
What's
sick.
Your Taco Bell order?
I'm kind of like, First, I start with the chicken quesadilla with the taco.
Classic.
Appetizer.
Yes. Yeah. And then I go on into the, beefy cheesy burrito thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get one of those, maybe two. I don't know. And then they used to have a double decker, and I love that one. I don't know if they still got them or not. Every now and then you can find them. But that's usually the order there. But then, you know, it depends on if I've eaten that day or not. And, if I haven't, then I can spend some money at Taco Bell.
Hell yeah.
But beefy. I mean, going to like Mexico, like we love Mexican food. So, so much so that we have a Jack Russell dog and my son named it Cheese Dip. And so, like, legit name, it's on the dog bed and on the collar and everything. So that's everybody so knows good. Cheese Dip.
If he's getting into something, you want to yell at him, what do you say?
Cheese! You know,
cheese.
You
just, yeah. Okay. I don't know if it was dip or cheese.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, if she's really in, it's a girl, too.
Yeah. Oh,
so, a girl named Cheese Dip. But, yeah, so, but we went the other night, and it was $120 for the family to eat, you know, it crazy. Mexican food. I was like, what in the world's happening here? So,
yeah, it's a strange
second job, you know.
Yeah. I spent that at Roast Pepper with just my girlfriend and I, but there was margaritas involved though.
Right,
so.
Yeah. We don't really drink or anything, but it was like you get a couple of cheese dips. The cheese dip's like $10 now.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a sweet tea. I think it was like $4. I'm like, this is nothing but some water, you know, a little bit of sugar, and a couple of bags of tea in there. You know,
I spent $5 on a cup of coffee. Well, I was at the airport though, but still, I was like $5.50 for a large drip coffee. Get out of here.
Just a regular old Folgers, or was it a
I don't know, it was just some like random store at the airport.
It wasn't even Folgers. No. That was cheaper than Folgers, so.
Probably so.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's just honestly that's culturally like the stuff that is important to us, right? And honestly like that's just growing up in small town USA.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And honestly, I feel like that's a good segue to the record, too, because your new record feels like middle America. It feels like down home music.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about that? So the new record dropped in February and another year,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, again, like the tale of growing up and like living, you know, you talk about like with your kids and stuff.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us the inspiration of like that name or exactly like when you decided to make that the title.
Yeah. I like your transition too. So speaking of Taco Bell, tell us about your new record. But yeah, so I named it Another Year Older because I don't know. I got Another Year Older. Like as soon as the record came out, my birthday happened. So, and I kind of planned it that way, but it was, everything's new now, you know, got a new deal, with Empire. There's so many different things happening and I just sort of kind of took a step back from what I had done. It's weird because, like, when you get in all this, like, I started out with pretty much a three-piece, and it was, like, upright bass, acoustic guitar, and, like, brushes and drums. It was very, like, cool. And then it's like, okay, and then it grows, and then it grows. And it's like, next thing you know, you look up one day, and you've got 10 people on the stage, and, you know, you got the buses and all the people working. And it's like, it's so loud. It's so big. It's like, I was like, okay, I want to get back to what I like to do. And so this was sort of a reset to go back, and it didn't change brands at all. Like I've never changed brands. I mean, that's just who I am. But, Faith Family Working Hard, and a guy came up to me the other night and literally told me my brand without me even saying it. And I was like, okay, I've nailed it down pretty good, but it's, the record was, I wanted to feel small town, and I wanted to be global, you know, like you want it to, you know, kind of relate to anybody, wherever they're at. And I think it has, we've definitely seen that response, but, you know, some of it I wrote, you know, about growing up, you know, baseball on the radio and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I've got my own kids and stuff. So, more of that is about, you know, me and my boy hanging out. And, but I mean, and then there's, a whole lot of little things, and it's cheese dip on a Saturday night. Like literally I wrote about cheese dip. I was talking, you know, it's like, that is our life. And so I just put kind of what I figured out along the way is, just cause I play music or write songs, whatever, but like I'm pretty much just like anybody else. And I was at the ball field yesterday watching my boy play, and it's like sitting and talking to the other dads. We're all the same, and it's just I figured out how to make things rhyme, you know? And so we all live pretty much the same kind of life. And so I just figured out, like, I'm going to write my story and how I feel and things like that, and then really good chance there's somebody else is going to relate to it, a lot of other people. And so that's kind of what happened whenever I did, when I first come out with Working Man and all that stuff. And then I just started writing about myself and my life. And then just so happens I'm just like most other people. So that's what this record was. And I stripped it back a little bit. I didn't stack a bunch of stuff. Like, as we've learned, as you kind of do this stuff, especially in Nashville, it's like the more stuff you stack on a record, it's like here's 14 guitars and here's, they're all playing the same thing, and you build this wall of sound, and it just sort of jumbles up everything, and then the vocal and the lyric is sort of lost in it. And my whole thing has been, I'm a songwriter and I want the lyric to get out, and my voice is my main instrument. So why am I covering that up? You know, my name's on the sign. Don't cover, you know, it's like, don't cover up my main instrument, you know? So yeah. It's like, that is what I try to do with this record. I try to pull some of that back out, and we cut the whole record in just a few days with my band and did it like we would play it live. So everything about the record is cool and special to me just because I produced it. I had my hand was on every bit of it. And so, I made all the decisions. I mean, I have an engineer. So I don't know how to do all the clickety-clack stuff, you know. But it's like, I have a guy, and I told him what I was looking for, and he nailed it. And then my guys, I let them kind of do their thing, and then I helped guide them in a direction that I was hearing. And so it was a fun learning experience, and you can kind of hear it in some of the songs. Like American Made was one of the first songs that we cut. And we were still dialing in like the sound I was trying to get. So if you hear it as opposed to, you know, Baseball on the Radio or Both Sides of the Fence or something like that, I had already gotten my sound dialed in perfectly. But American Made was sort of it was the first one we cut.
Yeah.
So I learned through the process of recording it too. So it was a fun time, and super proud of the record, and gotten a good feedback from it. So, but yeah, it's about growing up in a small town, but it's about love, and it's about family, it's about faith, it's about a little heartache in there. It's sort of got all the stuff, you know, to make a good stew there, you know.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, congrats, man.
Thank you.
I know how much work it is to produce a record. You know, not my own record, though. That's something I feel like is tough for a lot of artists to do, and I know some artists that have gone in with the intention of self-producing a record and then being like, all I see is this tree. I can't see the forest. I need to get out and have someone else like come and co-produce or just take the reins. I just want to go and sing and create. Was there any problems like that when you were like cutting this record? Where you're like, I don't know. Like, what do I do? Like that kind of a thing.
Yeah. It's a little overwhelming. And so you kind of, yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, especially I don't know all the technical stuff, and I just know what I want to hear. And so I'm trying to make that. And, you know, when you use a producer or something, they're going to put their flair on it, and they're going to do their little thing to it, which is not what I'm hearing, you know. And so sure. For this, I just wanted to try it and see how it worked. But it was definitely a lot, and you're working a lot on it, and you're going back and forth with the engineer. And even after you record it, you're – you know, we got to mix it this way. We got to do this.
And going through comps and tuning stuff.
All the time, you know. So it's a lot. But I don't know. It was nice for me to do it. And then I learned, if you can get past the crap, you know, it's like, okay, you sort of weed through it. And then you're like, all right, well, now we can see a little light here. And then you start figuring everything out. Then you feel more comfortable. But for me, it's a lot like writing a song by yourself. And so when you do that, you never know if it's as good as you think it is because it's just you on it. But if you got a couple of songwriter buddies or something that are, you know, also hit writers or something, you're like, oh, well, we got some big names on this. And so it must be good if you have them on it. But if it's you by yourself, it's like, well, I feel like it's good, but maybe it's not. Maybe I'm just a little partial to it.
A little doubt creeps
in. Yeah. So you just got to be, I think it's a confidence thing. And you just sort of got to go with it. If it fails, then it's on you, and you should try it again, you know, do something else. But that's kind of the way I was playing it was, well, if it don't work, then I've got 100 other songs I can go record, and we'll build another record. So
that's a nice problem to have.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been writing a while. So
do you feel like in the production process, like this was something that you enjoyed that you would do for someone else? Or is it kind of like,
yeah,
like if Nick was like, hey, Larry, I need you to help produce my record for me.
Yeah. We got to talk about percentages and stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Hell yeah. But, you know, I think so. Yeah, I mean, I would. I had a really good time, and I like recording. I like being in a studio. So, because I just, a lot like writing songs, I just see what we can come up with and see what something sounds cool. Let's try that. And so, yeah, I mean, if somebody hit me up and wanted to do something cool, then, yeah, I'd be down for it. It's one of those, if I could find the time to, because we tour a lot. I'm writing for a living. I do a lot of things. I got a lot of jobs. So piling that on there, they didn't need a real quick turnaround. Yeah, yeah. I could kind of work on it. But yeah.
I think there's different kinds of producers too. I mean, it's such a vague term a lot of times. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I look at Luke's music, and he's kind of got two producers, and he's got, you know, Chip, who does like kind of the nuts and bolts and then a lot of the editing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And of course he also sings and plays guitar on the record too. And then Singleton is like his co-writer and can produce things like the vocal. And I mean, Chip's incredible at that too, but like lyrics and songwriting, picking what songs and what's the vibe and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And he also plays guitar great too, but.
Well, I know. Yeah. All those guys. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, and for me, the producer thing, like now in the writing, when I first started writing, it was usually like me and one person sitting in a room.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, oh, we're going to add a track guy. And then the track guys started getting called producers. And then that become a thing. And then now we look and it's like there's 8 writers on a song. And it's like, because you have this producer and this. And it's like, it's a weird, things have changed, you know? And I'm still.
I didn't notice that on your record.
Because it wasn't. But I like to write. I think a lot of times when you put too many people in a room, it gets a little complicated. You know, it's just too much traffic going on. And I write with a lot of people, but I definitely have my favorites. And like Connie Harrington's one of them. Connie and I we actually do better if it's just us two. If you put more people in there, then we usually come out with songs not as good. But if you usually put me and her together in a room and just let us talk for a minute, there's a good chance we probably have the same title for a song, and then we would end up writing that. And, you know, we wrote Where I Find God, we wrote Earned It, and, I mean, Apollo Others. We just wrote one the other day. I'm going to cut here soon. It's an awesome song. But we'll kind of dig in, and we have a friendship, so we can open up a little bit. And then, you know, me and Red Akins write a lot of good songs together. I mean, I got a few buddies, Luke Laird, but there's quite a few that I've got that I just feel comfortable with. So we can go in and write a song as a two-way. Now, you know, whenever I write that and I turn it in, the publishing company, like, they don't always, it's funny because you have a lot of younger ones now that are working in publishing. So they've been used to hearing the demos from a producer, which sounds like something you would hear on the radio or something. But then you send them a song in, it's like, here's me playing acoustic guitar, playing it and singing it on my phone. And they're like, oh. It's always funny, when I'll turn it in, they'll say, oh, cool, thanks. But then I'll send a song that probably is not as well written, but it's better produced, and here's you a demo, and they're like, wow, this is amazing. So it's funny, a lot of people can't hear the rough version of it, and so that's what I like. I like to, if you can make that sound good and you can feel it, then you when you go to produce it and actually record it in a studio, that song's going to be really, really good. And so those are the ones I kind of look for. And we had a few of those rough demos, and we go in and record them, and it's like, yeah, there you go. Like, and it comes out, it's a strong song. They're harder to see through unless you're kind of trained that way. And that's the way I was doing it back in the day, you know? So it's my favorites.
I love that. I think that's an interesting thing too, just as the culture has changed and, you know, the times of track guys being in almost every writing room here in Nashville. And then, I mean, like where we're at now with Suno and stuff like that, people putting the song through there.
Yeah.
The ear of the person, they can't hear a song in its raw form and like know where it's going to go, not where it is.
That's right. Cool part. Speaking of Suno, like that's a big topic right now because a lot of the track guys and stuff are like, this is terrible. Like, we hate it. And so, you know, this is not original. Like, But I think it's a really cool tool. It's a tool. It's not an instrument, and it shouldn't be. You shouldn't throw it in there and pull out something and then put it online. Like, that's not doing it. But if you need an idea of a melody, or if you're not a singer, but and I we've used it too on like a demo or something. So you can put it in there, and then you can sing the melody, and it will literally take your melody and just put some music to it. It'll throw a generic voice on it, which is great for, there's a lot of songwriters that can't sing very good. You right. know? So like, if they're trying to sing a demo and you pitch it to somebody, then it's like, God, that sounds awful. But it's really a good song. They just may not sing very good. So if you can have a generic voice sing good, but it's your song that you've wrote the lyrics to and you come up with a melody or whatever, then I think it's cool. Because yeah. then you can hear what the song needs to, what they're trying to do with it.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, they can throw something in there and they may not have had a melody. And so it'll help them with the melody and make a song cool. I think it scares some people because it takes people out of the mix.
Yeah.
So you don't need 15 writers on it. You can have one dude or two guys or whatever, and then you got a pretty good demo here.
Yeah.
And you can hear it. You can hear a Suno demo, but they're cool. But I think, you know, if you're not writing a song, you're not really contributing much, then you don't need to be in that room. And, I've had good days and I've had bad days too. I've walked in rooms and didn't contribute a whole lot, you know? So I try to be, a little generous on that, you know, like just there's days, you know, but, I think for a lot of people that just kind of go and sit and, you know, mix up something real, here's a guitar vocal. Those are a little touchy with me. You know what I mean? It's like, especially when two guys wrote the entire song and another guy's getting a cut of it for,
well, I feel like usually like if I was going to be a track guy, which like this, I got this idea, I'm going to be a track guy. And then I was just like, I just didn't like computers very much.
Yeah.
But,
kind of need to like a computer.
Yeah. But I feel like they bring in stuff to write to. Here's like a bass, drums, guitar song done. You want to write to this usually.
Well, and you know what? Let me go back a little too, because there are some great guys who are track guy producers.
Yeah.
That are my favorite, and I love to write with them. And I went in, and me and that guy will write together, just a two-way, but we can put a really cool demo together. So not all track guys don't do anything, you know?
Okay.
Most of them I've written with are great, you know? And we have a good time. It's also a vibe, too. Like, if you come in and you're bringing the room up, you know what I mean? Like, you make us laugh, whatever, like, that's fun. That's cool. And I want to see us all succeed, you know? I think the Suno thing, what I was talking about, was like, you know, it does. It's going to cut some people out of the mix, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if you ain't bringing a whole lot of lyric stuff, you know, it's just a way for guys to be able to do it and not spend a ton of money or not have to cut their song in half or a third or a fourth or a 15th, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think it's a cool thing, and it'll probably rub people wrong, but I think there's a lot of people that are using it right now, and there's a reason why. And I think it's going to – I don't know all the rules, and I don't know all the stuff with it.
I got an email, like – I don't know if it was like spam or whatever. It was like Suno, like, hey, if you do content about Suno, like, we'll pay you or whatever. I was like, I'm not doing this.
How much they pay you?
Oh, I didn't get that far.
Well, we get pitched stuff like that too from AI companies. It's like, for even on like the Raise Rowdy account, they're like, we'll give you $300 to post about this. And I'm like, we're not going to do that.
$300?
I do a lot of overdubs and stuff. And like, I would say a good portion of it is replacing like Suno parts.
Really?
Yeah. So it's like, here's a Do-Ro part. And I'm like, okay, like just literally just play it exactly and then put it on this thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they're not using the stem, actually.
No, they're like humanized. Make it sound worse.
Okay. Yeah. That's the thing about the Suno. Like, it's perfect, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the melodies, whatever, the pitch, everything is right on. And you can always hear it, though, when you hear one come in, because it'll glitch every now and then. It's like, and so you can hear those. If a vocal is too smooth and too buttery, it's probably Suno. But
and also it's like the range, it's just like, it's like this, it's like This, you don't have Freddie Mercury singing on this track,
right?
Like,
yeah, yeah.
This is obviously fake.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But like I said, I'm always for a real demo, and I'm for real talent, and you doing it the real way. But I think that Suno is a cool tool.
Yeah.
And that's all it should be. It's a tool. It's not to go and make you a record. Like,
yeah.
It's also for people that aren't musicians to go
have some fun.
Yeah, like in a little sandbox for them, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And see what they come up with.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the drummer write a song, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. Nobody wants that.
I think it's interesting too, like now when a song comes across, like me and Kurt, one of the songs that Connor Hicks sent to us, he was like, "Man, this sounds like, it's cool hearing a real guitar and a real, like makes the real demos pop out that like are actually studio produced."
Yeah.
Kind of pop out even more when you hear them, which I think is a cool part.
Yeah.
And like listening to your record, it's like I can hear things that aren't 1,000% perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I can tell that there's humans playing this. Yeah. Like this acoustic guitar, the E string is 1 cent flat or whatever. You know what I mean? Or like,
or it's buzzing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, we had a lot of buzz because we're using old gut strings and stuff like that, and it's like they just buzz, you know.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter how sweet you're playing it, it's gonna buzz on you. And so we would hear that and be like, "All right, let's see if we can kind of, you know, push that down a little bit." And that, so that's the fun of it, like that's the real part of it. And you know, I like that. I like having fun with it. I like trying new sounds. We also went over to San Francisco and cut some songs. I don't know, a few months ago, and they had so many different toys in there, and I was like, "What is this thing?" And they're like, "This is a Moog board." I was like, "Yeah, bring it out," you know. And it's like, so we're like trying all this stuff, and you get these weird sounds, and it's like
your reggae record's coming out soon.
Yeah, wait for it, man. It's gonna be awesome. Yeah, I'm going beach vibes, you know. But it's all that stuff is fun to try, and I like so many different styles of music too. That like I don't just listen to, you know, modern country or old country, whatever. Like, I listen, most of the time it's not even country. Most of the time it's all over the place. Like, I love Adele, you know. Mm-hmm. I listen to Adele.
She's the best. That's
she
why.
Is. Mm-hmm. And then I listen to, like, Jason Isbell and listen to, I don't know, Foy Vance. And, like,
Foy's sick.
Dude, he's awesome. But the Averitt Brothers, like, just, I'm all over the place, really. And so this morning my boy's like, "Put on Big X to plug." That's what he calls him, Big X to plug. And
isn't that what his name is?
Yeah.
Or a club, Big X to club, sorry. Big X to club. I said, okay. And so I put it on there, and he's the biggest, the largest, you know what I mean? Just going to school, just getting
hyped up,
man. And so
walking to school just like,
yeah, let's go, headbutt somebody. Yeah. And so he's just, we listen to so many different things. We get on the golf cart, and the baseball field's right down the street from the house, so we're just riding to baseball practice, and it's like we're just cranking, you know, Big X. Or we're
I want Larry Fleet to be my dad. Well, hey, I want to get on the golf cart and go play some baseball and listen to Big X and plug and eat candy all day.
It's great. It's a good life. You know? My wife and we back in the garage last night, and it's just, I have a turtle box on the back, and that thing is just rocking, you know. And we come in, and bass is booming, and my wife's like, "Are you listening to Big X? Are you letting your son listen to Big X right now?" I'm like, "It's the censored version, first off." Yes. And but I mean, we're just ripping around the neighborhood, going to baseball practice, and we're listening to everything, you know?
I had the censored Bone Thugs and Harmony CD.
Yeah.
Because I was listening to Bone Thugs, my CD player, and my dad's like, "What are you listening to?" He puts the headphones on. He's like, "Mm-mm.
No."
You know, I was in, you know, sixth grade or whatever. He's like, "You're nope.
No.
Not happening, bud.
Bone Thugs, man. Yeah. Yes, let's go.
That's talking about the bone thugs.
Yeah. Meet me at the crossroads." Yeah. Yeah. That was a good set. We play Bone Thugs at a show every now and then, too. I bring my guy, Les. He plays where he does so many different things. We really don't know how to explain what his job title is, but he tunes guitars and sets stuff up, and he makes, you know, makes my tea for me. You know, he does. He's my tea tech, we call it. And so we just kind of hang out or whatever. But me and him used to play bars back in the day together, little duos and stuff. And so I'd be like, "Hey, you want to come out tonight?" He's like, "Yeah, what are you going to do?" I'm like, "Let's do Bone Thugs or let's do whatever it may be." And we'll go out, and we've been playing, you know, kind of country music or whatever all night. And then all of a sudden we bust off into No Diggity and Bone Thugs. And it's like, the crowd goes wild, man. Everybody loves Bone Thugs.
Absolutely. Care. It's that's the one of the craziest parts about country music right now too is the fan base is so wide.
Yeah.
That there's so many people from that came from other genres or liked other kinds of music that is all filtered in.
Oh yeah.
And you always see like those funny memes that are like if your playlist and it's like Snoop Dogg and Coe Wetzel next to each other, yeah. You know.
I mean, it's kind of mine. I like it, you know. But my problem is that I think I can do every style of music. So as soon as I listen to Snoop Dogg, I'm like, I should totally do this like rap record, man. That'd be pretty cool. And I'm like, no, what am I talking about? You know, but then I listen to Adele and I'm like, I'm not as good as Adele, but like, I could probably do some of that, you know? And so that's the way my brain thinks. So, which drives my wife crazy because I come home, I'm like, check it out. Like, I wrote this song. She's like, what are you doing? Like, you know, you're all over the place. And it's like,
we got babies to feed.
Yeah. Go get on the golf cart. Yeah, get out of here. And especially writing, and, you know, I have a vocal range that I can reach, you know, lows and highs and all over the place. So it's like, I like to try to do that stuff. I don't always nail it, but I like to try. And so, but recording records, I've always kind of stayed in a safe space, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's what people expect from me. And if I busted out a rap record, I don't know. I think I would lose some people, you know? But
what would your rapper name be?
Oh, I don't know. Big L the club.
Yeah.
Big Fleet.
Big Fleet. Yeah.
The Meat.
Big, yeah.
Big Feet. There we go. Big Fleet the Meat. There we go.
It's a sexy show.
Yeah. The Meat.
The Meat. Meat Sweat.
Speaking of that, you said you've been playing a bunch of shows. What has like that been looking like recently for you? Have you toured anything recently that you just like felt really good about?
Yeah, we've had some. I will say this, and I was talking to some venues. The country market has been weird this year.
Yeah,
and it has been even last year too. It's hard to really know. There's no predicting it really. So, like for instance, like Atlanta used to be a real strong market. You get down there and just blow it up, you know. Well, then last year they started talking like, well, it's super soft right now. We don't want to go to Atlanta. I'm like, it's been a couple of years. I need to get down there. So we booked a show, and it sold really well for me. But then the next guy might come in the next night in country and sell 200 tickets. You never know. And so, but we've also seen that throughout the country this year too. So, you know, we went to Montana, did three shows up there a few weeks ago. Great shows, but, you know, 50, 60% sold.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, but then you'll go the next night or next weekend to wherever, name it, you know, and it'll be sold out. And so all the shows this year have been really cool. The crowd show up, they sing everywhere. There's a lot of excitement and they like the new music and they're hollering out new songs, you know. Couple nights ago, they were like, Another Year Older, which we, you know, it's a song about, you know, losing a parent is what it was written about. And so I actually lost both parents in the same, like within a year or something like that. But so everybody's lost somebody and you remember the garden they had and the sunflower, you know, all the stuff. And it's like, so it's not necessarily like the party song, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I sort of just kind of left it out. We play it in certain places, but last Friday night we were in the intersection in
Michigan. That in Michigan?
Yep.
Yeah, a great club.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of people there, and they're rowdy. And so we played it, and the whole room sang it. And it was like, so, you know, it's been a cool year because I think for the longest time you get told, hey, you need to, you got to have high energy. You know, the faster the song, the better. But then it's not always the truth. I think people want the most powerful song, the most sing-along type song, you know. And so we've been kind of figuring all this out. We've been playing for a long time, but we're trying a lot of new stuff this year. Like this past weekend, I just didn't have a drummer. I was like, we're just not taking a drummer. And which we were doing two seated theaters and then the intersection. So the first night we went and played and people were like, they come up to me afterwards like, this is the greatest show we've ever seen. Because we put intros in there. We did like spacey stuff. I did a whole bunch of storytelling about where these songs come from and all that stuff. And people were coming back. This one dude said, man, I have seen Garth Brooks and you're up here. And I was like, dadgum, all right. And so me and Garth. So I was like, but I thought it was cool because it was just a fiddle player, like acoustic bass. He was playing like a ukulele bass. And like, so it was this very cool setup. And then the next night we went and played a club, you know, for 1,000+, whatever it was. And it's like, we're up there, we're doing our thing and we're having a ball and people are loving it. They're singing every word. But then I seen some people, each little group or whatever had seen us over 30 times a piece. And so I was like, hey, what's up? You know, I see them out a few times a year. And they're like, man, yeah, this was cool. I was like, what'd you think? They're like, yeah, I missed the drums. And I was like, okay. And then the next lady, you know, older lady, she's like, yeah, I like to jam. You know, I just want to rock. And I was like, I'm not really a rock star, you know, like I'm more of like the storytelling guy, you know, but okay, you know, I like it. And so we heard it from them. And then that room, you know, this sort of group of people wanted to rock out. And then in the same room, there was these other people that were just kind of enjoying the show, just soaking it in, you know. Yeah. And then the next night you go, we got video. There's like people crying, you know, it's like we're in a seated theater and it's like an emotional roller coaster. And I'm laughing. We're all telling jokes. We're, you know, talking about, I tell a lot of jokes about, you know, my parents or whatever, just growing up and different things. And so all of a sudden, you know, everybody's, you know, they come to me afterwards and I'm like, man, it felt like we were all in the living room, just hanging out and listening to you play. And I was like, that's what I want. Like, I want that kind of feel. So we've been trying stuff that throughout the year and it's working, but you're also learning stuff too. Like you sort of need something, some little backbeat. It ain't got to be, I think nowadays, like in commercial music, it's almost like we've taken rock drummers and thrown them into mix, and it's drums just wash out everything. So you got to play it a little bit different. And so we're learning a lot about some dynamic stuff that we needed to be doing for a while. And so we're changing a lot of stuff up and it's working. It's cool. But yeah, we've seen the touring market be a little crazy, but then we just had to cancel this stuff in Europe we got coming up here in a few weeks or whatever. Just the economy right now is awful, trying to fly to a different country. They're like, we're running out of jet fuel. I was like, well, I'm not coming, you know, so I ain't getting stuck. But so, you know, we'll go back and do it or whatever. But those shows were like sold out, like the excitement for that. And then we got Australia coming up in August. And so, you know, huge excitement there. And we went there last year and had 20-something thousand people singing Where I Find God. I was like, this is nuts. I've never been here in a different country, 24 hours away on a flight, you know, from my house. And so you're getting to see the music work worldwide. Impact. And that's a really cool thing. We're just not stuck to the Southeast, which I love. But, you know, we're born and raised there. We've played that forever. So now being able to take this thing and go to all the other countries, go to the West Coast, you know, go to Montana, you know, it's really cool seeing people. And it makes me feel real, you know, happy and honored, really, that when I show up somewhere, no matter where we're at, there's at least a few hundred people going to show up, you know. Yeah. That's a pretty cool feeling to have. So.
No, I love that. And I think it's so interesting hearing, like, you know, you talk about like the rooms being different. I mean, that's definitely what we hear across the board from promoters, from club owners, from artists.
Yeah.
You know, it's a changing market and live seems to be changing more and more.
Oh yeah.
And me and Kurt have gotten a little too high sometimes and I'm like, I'm like, man, I feel like the live shows are changing.
Hey, it definitely is.
Yeah.
And some of it is not for the better, you know? And I don't know what the reason, I think it's oversaturation really is, it's too much, congestion, you know? So you have everybody that has been doing it for a while and they're at some level, you know, where I'm at, let's call it, you know, so you're selling theaters or something. And that's really where I'd like to be. That's where I want it to get to. And we got there fairly fast. And I'm good. I like that. And then other people they'll blow up on TikTok overnight and they go straight to the theater. Yeah. So something that I've worked for a long time and I'll get to a spot. These other people can blow up there or some people from here might drop down to this level. So everybody's sort of in this mid-range level. mm-hmm. and there's so much traffic. If you're Morgan Wallen or whatever, there's only a few people that are going to sell stadiums. You right. know what I mean? So people will pay big money to go watch him in a stadium. And then people will go to a bar to watch a small act. But in the mid-range level there, there's so much traffic that you got to pick. And the way the economy is right now, too, like you kind of got to pick and choose what you're going to do. So, you know, these my tickets are, I don't know, they're anywhere from $40 to $100 plus. You know, never know what, depending on what venue. Mm-hmm. But it's like in that range, by the time you and your wife go out or your girlfriend, whatever, and then you go to dinner, get some cheese dip, there's $120. Yeah. And then it's like, get parking, your margarita, park, you know. Babysitter. Next thing you know, babysitter, you're in it for $400, $500, $600.
Yeah.
Most people don't have that kind of money to blow it every night or every weekend or even once a month. So you sort of got to pick, you know, one or two shows, three shows, whatever a year you might go to.
Yeah.
Where before, it just wasn't as much traffic. If I come to your city, you're gonna show up because you know here I am, and it ain't that expensive. So that's definitely a thing that we've seen. There's just too much traffic. And that's why I try to get away from everybody. You know, like I did a small town tour this year, so we went to McMinnville down the road over here, and sold it out, and then went to Huntington, Tennessee, this little small theater out there. Really cool. And it sold out in pre-sale. Like, there's a ton of excitement there because nobody ever goes there.
Were y'all, did you guys do the Granary in Ohio?
No, we just played there the other night. We did Van Wert, Ohio.
I thought I saw that when I was looking at the thing. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, it's coming up. There you go. All right.
There you go. Yeah, we just played there on Friday.
Oh, was it good?
Oh yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah,
it was so much fun. You're gonna crush it, dude. We do like Luke's band like plays. Sometimes we'll do like a show the night before the show.
Yeah,
and so we did that at the Granary, and then played in Ohio at the university, and it was great. And I saw that on the press thing of that you were going to play there, and I'm like, this is gonna be cool.
Heck yeah, I love Ohio. Every time we go, it's awesome. Dude. Like,
it's great.
And I have a couple of people in the band that are from Ohio, and it's like. Every time we go to Columbus, man, it's like people pile up in there. It's sold out. They're rowdy. They sing everywhere. We went to Van Wert, Ohio, and played. It was like on a high school campus or something, but it was one of the nicest like performing arts centers I've seen, in, like especially in a smaller town like that. It was awesome. We went there and played, had a great show. But everywhere we go in Ohio is awesome. So
yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. I agree. I think Ohio is like.
For lovers.
It is. Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's like the gateway to the Midwest, right? So
yeah,
like that's where it starts. So the people are nice. I always talk about like Country Concert in Fort Laramie, Ohio, which is a festival I go to often.
Yeah.
And it's like there'll be 20,000 people there and you see two fights the entire weekend.
Yeah.
Everyone's that's just hugging each other, drinking beer. You know?
That's what you want. You know what I mean? It's all about just going and having a good time, you know?
Yeah. No, and I think that's an important part of it, too. And as the world gets crazier with, you know, all the division and honestly, like AI, you know, we talk about Suno, of course, but like I think that the intimate personal experience is like just so much more important. And that's what, you know, like you talked about, like the torn down show.
Yeah.
You're giving the piece of like, here's how these songs, here's how we made them. Here's the story behind writing it. Like, I think that's just going to become more and more important as to make it feel even more real and more grounded.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, that's what I like. I mean, I'll tell you, one of the coolest shows I ever seen was Need to Breathe, and they did an acoustic show, they called it. And they still had their band, but it was like everybody was on acoustic instruments, and they still had a drummer, but he's playing, you know, brushes and little percussion stuff. It was the coolest show I think I've ever seen. I loved it. And from then on, I was like, well, that's something pretty cool, you know? And they told some stories and stuff, and I just seen how everybody was into it. And, you know, I was a fan of them before I seen the show, but I was a way bigger fan after that. Yeah. And I think whenever you go see somebody live, if they're like personable you feel like you can go hang out with them and you want to hear like, I would like to hear the story behind Working Man or Where I Find God or whatever. Like, if you can go and you can be cool, because I always tell my band, I'm like, we're not that cool, dudes. Like, our job relies on if these people show up. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Like, let's go out there and give them a good show. Like, it's about them. They're paying their money to come out. Like, we're not that cool. So just get that out of your head and just go have a good time. And so if we have fun, they're going to have fun. And that's the goal. Go out there and have a good time. Be, you know, just do your thing. Show off playing, because we've worked really hard to learn our instruments and to learn how to be a good songwriter, how to do our talent, you know. We've worked hard at that. So, like, go out there and show off. I'm not trying to hide it. We're not going to track it up, you know. Like, just do your thing. And so yep. I think people enjoy that. And they come out and they, like, get to watch people actually do what they were meant to do and do it very well. So it's a pretty cool thing.
I ain't bragging if it's true.
That's it. That's it.
What my mom always says.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, man, I'm super thankful to have you out here and hopping on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
No, of course. It's been great, too. A crazy moment. Like, we used to have a radio show back in Pittsburgh, and we used to play before it was on the radio full time. That's where I found God.
Oh, yeah.
So just when it was on, you released it. So
that's been a good, that built a career for me. And, and it, that's one of the coolest things. You go out anywhere, literally in the world, and there's a good chance somebody's going to know that song.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some cases there's tens of thousands of people that know it. And so, that's been a really cool thing, and just a good song. It can grow legs and walk around, you know?
Yeah.
And so that one did, and it has built everything for me. So
it's beautiful to see. And honestly, a beautiful song, both in what it's about as well as the end of the melody and the words.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, of course. Well, and honestly, this new record is in that same vein.
Well,
you know,
thanks.
There's so many songs like Both Sides of the Fence we were listening to on the way here, and we're like, man, wouldn't that be great just straight down the center?
Yeah. I tell people all the time, like, we're actually more alike than we give ourselves credit for, you know? I don't care if whatever, you know, politically what side of the fence you're on, like, most people are pretty much in the middle there, and they get along whether or not we agree on everything or not. And it's like, but just in life too, like, I try to, like, make friends with everybody and actually people are way more, like, way different than I am. Like, those are the ones I'm drawn to, because I want to just want to talk. Maybe they'll give me a good idea for a song. I don't know. And it's like, so we'll kind of, I like to meet people. I like to learn about them. And so, and when you get down to it, there's only been a very few handful of people that I could not carry on a conversation with. And you got to be a terrible person if you cannot, if I can't find something in common with you. Like, that was, there's very, very, very few people I've ever met that I was like, man, I literally have nothing in common, or I can't talk to this person, you know? So if you look at it that way, most of us are pretty much alike. And that's kind of what the song is, man. It's like, but that, I mean, Another Year Older is a strong one too. And like, that's where, I thought that was a cool title for an album, and we're all just getting another year older too. Me, I feel like it's going faster now, but every song on it, man, I'll put heart and soul into it, and super proud of it. And I know the band is too, and where everybody is. So, even my wife, you know, she complimented it. So I was like, wow,
we'll take that.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Doing good.
Thank you. Yeah. How about that? Yeah.
None. It's like we talked about, like, you know, it's a story of working class America. It's a story of, you know, everybody's neighbors, you know, and that's the thing that I've always loved about your music, and your voice just expresses it so well, you know, because not everybody has that voice, but everybody has their story, their family, their people.
And I can be the one to help tell their story. And that's what I've always kind of said. And it's funny, like, when I first got going, you know, I poured concrete for a living. So, and then when I got a record deal, that's, you know, I quit all that. But that's what my dad does. It's what we all, you know, my granddaddy retired from concrete business. So that's what the Fleets did. And then I figured out a way to make things rhyme and tell people's story and stuff. And I was talking one day, I was talking to a buddy of mine. He was a plastic surgeon. And he said, I was talking about working, man. I was like, yeah, you know, it's all blue collar. He's like, man, he's like, I'm white collar, you know, like, I'm a surgeon, you know? And he was like, but I relate to working, man, because I work 12 hours a day putting people back together. And I was like, well, that's pretty good. I didn't really think about that, you know. And then we'll go to my shows, and you'll see people that look just like me out there, literally just like me. Yeah, beards, everything. I seen a dude the other night. I was like, is that my brother in Tampa? Like, nope, look just like him, though. And so they look like me. They dress like me half the time, you know. But then you'll see the other people, and they'll be in a – not a suit and tie, but like you can tell they had a suit on earlier, you know? And but they'll come out and like there's all different classes of people, whatever, you know, income class you're in, it doesn't really matter because they're all in the same room together. Then you'll see little kids and you'll see 90-year-old dudes out there cutting it up, you know what I mean? And that is what I wanted. And if we can get everybody and make it, because we're all the same, and yeah. If you make more money than this guy, who cares? You figured out a way to spend more money too. You know what I mean? It's all the same. And so it's all pretty relevant when you put us into a room together. And so I figured out that it's not, I love blue collar stuff and I relate to that because that's what I am. But at the end of the day, it's working class people. It's not just, it didn't matter what color your collar is. It's just what. Sounds like a pretty good song.
I was gonna say, dude. Yeah, that's a title for sure. Earlier, put that down.
I'm a genius. but yeah, I mean, it really doesn't. It doesn't matter what color your collar is. It's just about coming out there, and that's what I'm trying to write is everybody's story, and everybody pretty much has the same story. So
yeah,
long way around that. Yeah, there you go.
And it's been a blessing to get to watch you. I mean. And every stage that I've gotten to see you, whether it's like popping up with Wallen, you know, or it's, you know, playing side stage at a festival before all that was happening. So
we still think about those. And I was telling a story the other day because we've had this new band out with us and they're called Dasher.
Yeah, love them.
They're great. And I'd met them. I went and did, their dad is on a podcast with the Unashamed podcast, whatever. So I went. And I was talking to him that day, and he's like, yeah, I play. And I was talking to Max. And so I ended up, you know, talking with him for a little bit. And then I was riding down the road one day, and they were like, who do you want to take on tour with you for the spring or whatever? And I was like, and here's a list of people, you know. And I was like, went through, and I was just went and kind of feeling what they had pitched to me or whatever. So I just went and looked at what they had. And I was like, let me just go check them out real quick. And I listened to them. I was like, This is they're awesome. Great. They're great.
They're so
and
good.
So I just hit up. I was riding in a minivan that they had loaned me from this theater, whatever we played. I'm in Kansas, riding down a dirt road, listening to Dasher. And I was like, hey, I'm calling Max. So I just called him up. And I was like, hey, you want to go on tour with me? He was like, yes, I would love this. So they've been out, and they've been killing it every night. And the crowd freaking loves them. But I don't know how I got on them. But anyways, if you haven't listened to Dasher too, they're awesome.
So good.
Yeah, and they're working on all kind of new stuff. We're going to do some writing stuff with them. But I see big things in their future.
I agree.
Yeah.
We've been lucky enough to get them to play some of our events here in town.
Yeah.
And the first time, we had Max on like a writer's round.
Yeah.
And then we had them come play full band kind of like pretty quick after that.
Yeah.
And just to watch the crowd, because they go crazy in a different way than they do for the other stuff that was there.
Yeah.
And there's not often when we do those events that they won't let them leave stage and they make them play another song or
two.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They did that for them.
I mean, they're on to something. Mm-hmm. And they keep the faith. They're out there. I mean, they've done some really cool gospel stuff. And then I would bring them out and I'd be like, you know, let's get out here. So like we would do like Swing Low, Sweet Chariot or something like that. And whenever I'd kick off and I'd start or whatever, then Max would come in on the back half of the first verse or whatever. Everybody turned loose on it. And then we'd come back and I'd do the first part of the second verse, and then Layla would kick in. And she got that, like, that church soul voice, you know? Mm-hmm. And the crowd would go wild, and then their harmonies would give me chills every night. I was like, man, this is really cool. And so I've been talking with them and, you know, trying to help them out any way I can, and help them guide through the business a little bit, you know, but they're great kids, and I see a lot of good stuff coming for them. But yeah, I mean, I played a lot of those opening acts and side stages and all that. And me and some guys were talking about the other day, and I was like, man, we used to drive to like Minnesota for no money and just hope we sold a few t-shirts to like get some gas because I drove the Winnebago.
Yeah.
And I was like, we just need enough to get out of here, you know? And we never made any money at it. And it was just fun. But I told Dasher that the other day. I mean, that's what I was getting at. I was like, enjoy the ride. Because it's like, you know, starting out, like for me anyways, it was keep my head down and just truck along and try to get to the finish line. And then we look up and we're sold out the ramen. You know, we did all this stuff. And actually, Ando told me, he was like, hey, man, just look up every now and then and enjoy where you're at, you know? And so I told them the same thing. I was like, you need to just look. When you walk out there and you're opening for me, but they give you a standing ovation, soak it in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's because you're going to leave here and you're going to go play your own gigs and you're going to have about 15 people show up and it's going to be a real kick in the sack. You know what I mean? So it's like, you definitely want to like soak it in, but also enjoy the 15 people that showed up to see you. Cause we were there too. I remember going on the road with Willie Nelson and I left and literally thought I was famous. Cause I went on the road with Willie Nelson. And then when I come off, I sold 15 tickets in a bar and I was like, dadgum, I'm not famous at all. You know? And like, then it was just like, it sucked the soul out of me, you know? But then you go back the next night and you got 100 people show up and you're like, oh, we're back, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a weird ride. And I told him, I was like, you just got to pay attention and like enjoy all this and even enjoy the little van moments and, you know, borrowing your dad's truck to get over here or, you know, whatever it may be. Take all that because there's a lot of cool stories in there. And all of my favorite stories are from me and Crazy Legs riding in a Winnebago.
Yeah.
That's where it was at. So that's where it started.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And keeping the people around that, you know, like getting to do the album with your band and
yeah,
just having them be even a bigger part of it.
Oh, yeah. They were with me for a long, long time, you know. There's some of these guys been with me for 10 years or so, you know. And back when we were playing bars together and splitting, like sharing hotel rooms and people sleeping in a pull-out couch and different things like that, just... I had a Dodge truck pulling a U-Haul trailer because my drummer worked at U-Haul, you know? So we got a free trailer. Come on. And it was but we were riding around in that thing, piled up five deep in a Dodge truck, you know? Just trying to get to wherever we had to go to. And then finally got lucky enough with Campers Inn. They gave me a Winnebago, and I drove that thing, man, cross country, you know? Everywhere. We'd stay in campgrounds. We'd pay $30 a night and pull up to a campground. And because it was like $100 and something, you know, for a hotel room. So for 30, we could roll in and camp in the Winnebago. And I would stop and get like Spam at the truck stop, you know, cooking up Spam sandwiches, dude. And we'd do that, hang out, have the slides. I had a little TV out there, man. It was living, you know, it was fun. And then as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, those little moments go away. And you're just on a tour bus and you wake up where you're supposed to be and everybody just sort of walks around and coughs for a few hours, you know, and then you hack and carry on and you go in and sound check and then you go take a nap, you know, then you wake up the next place. And it's like, so all those little fun moments were the ones coming up. And once you kind of get to a spot, those little moments go away because it's more convenient. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's all part of the journey. And I mean, honestly, like you talked about, like some of the kids don't even get to have those moments to look back on.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough.
I was talking to one dude, the other guy that works for me, he worked for this other dude, and young kid. He said he had two or three buses and, you know, tractor trailers and security guards, and he's like a teenager. And I was like,
I know who you're talking about, but yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, huh? And like, it just blew my mind, which
is crazy, right?
It's wild. But like, I guarantee you, they wouldn't in a Dodge Picket because he ain't even old enough to drive, you know? It's like, and so, you know, it's like, but you didn't take that ride, which, hey, good for him, you know what I mean? But, like, there's a lot of good stories, and there's a lot of team building in those Winnebago days and van days and truck days, you know? So, but there's a lot of them that won't ever experience that. So they don't get that memory that, you know, it's just sort of like, well, I woke up one day and then I was playing an arena, you know, and it's like, oh, cool. Like, what happened before that? I went to school, you know. But I mean, and nothing against them. That's just the way their journey was. But
yeah,
I kind of liked mine. There's a lot of songs from it, too. So, but to each their own. same deal with writing songs and Suno. I mean, we've talked about it all today. There's no right or wrong way. I mean, use it what you, you know, if you want to, do it your own way. And that's what I think everybody should do. Yep. My way is not everybody's way. So.
No, but it's a pretty good way.
It's done all right.
My way or the highway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
Oh, man. Well, guys, make sure you go check out Larry's newest record. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye out on some of those shows. If you were at the Granary show that I was hanging out with drinking beer and Kurt was playing, Larry's coming up there here shortly. And, man, thanks for coming out here and hopping on with us.
Yeah, thanks. Need to mention my OnlyFans page, too.
It's spicy.
It is spicy. Worth it. All that spicy content. So, man, thanks for having me out. It's been great. We'll do it again, I'm sure. Another 5 years or so.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks you for listening to the Rage Rally Podcast. I'm Nick Tressler.
I'm Kurt Ozon.
And we'll see you in the front row.
Woo!